Attention, citizens of planet Remulac. The gelatin pools will close in 5 time units.
All hail Kuldroth, High Master of 7 galaxies and inheritor of the Megmasome genetic chain.
Hail, High One.
Enough. Allow me to felicitate you on your pair meeting. I trust your cones are now well honed.
Yes, we did not leave our gloves chamber for 17 time units.
You, Beldar, and you, Primat, have been chosen to assume a new position in our space program.
High Master, we are honored to have been selected. Together, my mate Primat and I can meet any challenge.
What is it?
You are to speed your way to a remote solar system on the frontier and seize a tiny planet inhabited by inferior beings who call themselves humans. Using these humans as a slave labor force, you will establish a minor protoid refueling station for my massive fleet of star cruisers on their way to mine the ore clouds of Glangzeep. This Larflowl catalog contains all you need to know about the Earthlings and their ways.
No problem.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I am your host, Scott Watt. I am joined once again by my good friend, Mr. Will Fordyce.
Hello, hello.
So this is really a last minute. I contacted Will. We're recording this on a Wednesday. I contacted Will a couple hours ago and said, I want to do this podcast. We both watched the project literally an hour ago, and it's all fresh in our minds because it had to be, because if you knew what we were talking about, you would forget about it immediately as well.
That's why I wanted to do it as soon as possible, just because, like, I want this out of my mind. I don't want to think about it for the next, like, any amount of time. It's so weird, the juxtaposition of how I feel about the movie and how I, like, view this.
Okay, so what we're talking about is we're talking about the 1983 unaired cartoon pilot, The Coneheads.
Rightly so, unaired.
Yes, I can see why it was not unaired. But when you look at it, so it stars the voices of Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin and Lorraine Newman. Mm-hmm. Lorne Michaels is involved. Al Franken, Tom Davis. It's made by Rankin Bass, the who did all those Christmas cartoons. They're the ones who produced this. There's just a ton of big names behind this.
Yeah, I'm not sure, like, what, and it almost fail, like, spoilers alert. You're not going to watch this, I assume, but like, essentially it was the movie and it was just condensed down to a quick, like, snapshot of a kid's cartoon. Is that what they were going for?
I don't think so. And yes, because the movie came out in the 90s. This came out way before the movie. Mm-hmm. But however, if you've watched the Coneheads movie, and by the way, Will and I did a podcast on that, so go back and check that one out. You can see elements of this cartoon that they used in the movie, such as them landing and Beldar getting a job as a TV repairman. Mm-hmm. That's right out of the movie. And I don't believe that was ever addressed in the show. And then, of course, you see things from the show where he stops and drinks gas right out of a gas line, you know, while pumping gas into his car. That was from. So they have taken elements from the sketch from Saturday Night Live, but they've added lore. And that lore is what they used in the movie.
And I don't know what happened. Like, I have a fondness, and maybe it's just like nostalgia, that I enjoy the Coneheads movie, but that for some reason that, like, when I watch the Coneheads movie, I'm delighted. And when I watched this, I was not appalled, but I was just like, it was not thrilling. It was rough.
I was baffled at how so many people could get this wrong.
Did you say you didn't think this was supposed to be a kid show, even though it was animated?
No, because there's a lot of sexual innuendo in there with the rings they put on heads. So there was a lot of sex, space sex jokes in this cartoon. It's drawn like a kid's cartoon, but I think it was supposed to be sort of like the Flintstones and the Jetsons. I think it was supposed to be like a primetime cartoon. Because there's a lot of adult situations in there.
Very much so. Yeah, there's that was my biggest note, because I was coming at it from like a, you know, they had these characters and they were trying to like squeeze the kids market so that they could, you know, make the funds from toys and all the, you know, fun stuff that that you get from like having a syndicated kids show. I mean, but even saying that, having it be an adult animated, was this before, because this was before a lot of the like animated adult
this was 83, and when you look at it, the way I looked at it, it was like this was a year after John Belushi died. And I can't help but think that if John Belushi was still alive, he may have done a voice, because on the TV show on SNL, Belushi was the main guy from Remulac, the guy that sends them to Earth.
Oh,
the leader of Remulac. He played that character on SNL. And I believe if he was still alive, he probably would have done that voice in this cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, it, like you were saying, is they had a crack team like putting this together. It was a lot of people from SNL, and I think you mentioned it was Lauren Michael produced. So maybe the good thing about it, it was seed planting for the movie, which I enjoy.
I enjoy the movie as well. So just to break it down, they send, you know, the leader of Remulac sends Beldar and Primate to Earth to take over the Earth. So they've turned it into, and I don't know if this was supposed to be the joke or if this was the way they were doing it, they turned it into a sort of like old school honeymooners sitcom.
Yeah.
With the bickering, you know, they were bickering. It's like, you told me to turn left.
No, I didn't tell you to turn left. I was doing just fine before you said anything.
Beldar, we are approaching their puny solar system. Perhaps we should rehearse your speech again.
Very well. I will put the guidance controls on automatic. Here. People of Earth. Your weapons.
I am Beldar, the timekeeper.
People of Earth. I am Beldar, the timekeeper, from the planet Remulac.
Your weapons are useless against us.
I know. I was only pausing.
Well, you don't have to bite off my cone. Mibs.
Mibs. Mibs.
Mibs.
Mibs. Mibs. Fair. Why do I not simply read the speech?
Unacceptable. You must commit it to memory.
Maintain low tones. Maintain low tones.
Do you want me to guide the craft?
Mibs, Mibs.
Slow down, Beldar, or we will miss the planet entirely.
Just provide me with the coordinate indices and leave the craft guidance to me.
As I previously indicated, these are the coordinate indices.
That is not what you showed me. Mibs.
Mibs.
Well, now we must stop and reassess our approach.
Yeah, so they turned it into... And they have a laugh track, which is... Oh. Oh, awful. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Just the timing of everything.
The timing of the laugh. You're correct, Will. The timing of the laugh track is terrible.
Even in the, because you mentioned the sex jokes, like the first line out of Dan Aykroyd, Beldar's character, they meet the king or the leader, and the leader says, have y'all like honed your cones? Meaning, you know, did y'all like, I guess, resonate so that, you know, procreate because you're genetomates. And they say, oh yeah, we spent 17 time units together. And then that bad laugh track kicks in, and it's like,
right.
That's the first joke out of the, you know, it's the second, like the first big joke.
Men are quick in bed. Oh, 17 minutes and it was over.
I thought that was pretty good.
Well, yeah.
Never mind. We'll...
Actually, 17 minutes is pretty good.
But anyway, so they're this bickering couple that don't work well together, and that's how they crash land on Earth, is because one said turn left and he heard it wrong or something.
Yeah, and they're rehearsing his speech and they lose his speech. It's just all for naught, because I can't believe that they, once they had a finished product, I can't believe they all looked at it and said, we nailed it.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
Well, do you think that, because they're coming from 70s, like, because the SNL sketches were anywhere from, you know, what, like 3 minutes to 10 minutes, depending on how quick. I mean, most of them were a little bit like maybe 7 to 10, but you know, sometimes they had some quick ones. So maybe expanding it out and adding their jokes and then having the animators do all their stuff. They were like, well, yeah, it looks good to me. Because, you know, sometimes I forget the terminology, but it's like when you invest so much, you can't back out.
Probably. Yeah. If you invest so much time and money, it's like, well, we got to finish it. And I mean, I'm sure there was a write off and accountants took care of this, but there is no way that anybody would have picked this up, even with the names attached. I thought the animation was very primitive as well. And I don't know if that's what they were going for.
Well, maybe like you're saying is like they were just trying to like get this out, like, because it was reminiscent of like Hanna-Barbera, the Flintstones, the, you know, some old, like old style. What is it, like 40s, 50s cartoons, 60s maybe?
Yeah, but I figured if this is your pilot, if this is what you are presenting, make it look good. And
yeah.
And they drew Beldar with this John Waters paper-thin mustache. I don't know where that came from.
Didn't Dan Aykroyd?
Because it wasn't in the sketches and it wasn't in the movie.
Yeah. Didn't he have a mustache at one point, like Dan Aykroyd himself?
Aykroyd did have a mustache at one time.
So maybe they modeled that, like the animator saw a picture of him and they're like, oh, a mustache, yeah. Let's see what that looks like. Or maybe to help distinguish, like, you know, his manliness on his planet, they gave him a mustache.
They also gave him a pot belly that's always sticking out. So he's got, whenever he's either wearing pajamas or whenever he's wearing any shirt, he's got this the last three buttons are unbuttoned and his stomach is hanging out. It's like that was never part of the Coneheads humor, that, you know, that he was a slob. They just missed so much in this.
I don't know, because the sketches were entertaining too.
Yeah.
And the movie was entertaining. So somewhere in between, whatever was going on, like they just like, and maybe it's just a culmination of like watching humans act weird has a little bit more of a like pleasure to it, because, you know, the Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd personified like stiff and these like oddball characters. So as maybe just instinctually we get the joke because the characters are acting funny, but it doesn't translate to animation.
I agree with that. I was about to say, you don't get the same jolt or whatever it is with Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin acting as robotic aliens. They didn't come across as robotic aliens. They sounded different too. They didn't sound like the way they did in the sketches. That was a bit off.
Yeah, I agree.
There was a couple of things that I found interesting in here. One is, while they're on Earth, Primat tells Beldar, I'm with Cone. And in the cartoon, she gives birth through her head. So, because in the movie, her water breaks. So in the movie, I guess she gives birth in her lower regions, whatever that might be. but it's set up where the curtain on Jane Curtin is covering her cone. So he's telling her, and I just don't know how that physically would work. Now that's something I guess you could do it, but that would work better in a cartoon when a person is giving birth to another alien through the crown of her head.
I don't know if that would have, that's terrible. Cause I'm still coming mentally at this as like, why would you go through the animation process if it wasn't during this time period, if it wasn't for kids or an attempt for it? Cause it was almost Smurf-like. I guess that was what I felt was the closest animation in my mind was Smurfish.
Yeah, I can't believe this was made for kids. There's just many sex jokes, and you know, not a lot of kids want to see an alien giving birth through her head.
When did The Simpsons come out? Do you know when it first aired? Was it during this time?
It was the late 80s, so it was a few years after this. I think it was 89. 88 or 80. And this, well, I think the Tracy Ullman show was on from 85 to 87. And that's so when we first saw The Simpsons. So this was a couple of years before even the earliest rendition of The Simpsons.
Okay. So maybe they were the pioneers. I mean,
I don't see anybody. I don't think anybody had seen this. I think Lorne Michaels felt like George Lucas felt after the Star Wars Christmas special. It's like after he saw this, it's like nobody can see that. I hate quoting Jack and Jill because it's an awful movie. But there's scene Al Pacino's like, burn this.
Nobody sees this.
And that's how I feel everybody involved in this had to feel after they saw the completed. It's like, burn this. Nobody.
Could I ask you a favor? Could I hear your best Al Pacino?
Hoo-ah!
There you go. I like it.
If I was 20 years younger, I'd take a flamethrower to this cartoon.
Perfect.
One thing that made me chuckle, I never laughed at this. And after I heard the first joke with the soundtrack, with the laugh track, I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
So they're calling home from Earth the almighty Remulac god or king or whoever he is. And he goes, almighty ruler of all universes. And he goes, eight. It's actually eight. That got a chuckle out of me. And then they called him back again and goes, ruler of eight galaxies. Well, now it's six. Two minor laughs in this through the whole thing.
I laughed at when they crash land, they get chased by the dogs because they jump off the street. And then they get into the television repairman's studio. And they said they kind of set up their like foreigners and they don't have like the right paperwork. And he's like, oh, we could work this deal under the table. And they go, oh, okay. And then they get under the table and continue the conversation. I got a slight chuckle out of that. I was like, oh, okay, there it is.
And we found out in this cartoon why they keep saying they're from France.
Oh yeah. This provided a little bit more, because in the movie we find them just starting on Earth and crash landing. And right. So we got a little bit of backstory.
So to go to the movie, it's in the trailer, but it's not in the movie. Dan Aykroyd is driving a cab in the movie, and a guy in the back seat goes, where are you from? And there's like a delivery truck next to him that says French bread. And he goes, I come from France.
But
they don't put it in the movie. And I always found that odd because I come from France is connected with the Coneheads. So to not have that in the movie, not have that major part, I don't think any of that was explained. It's been a while since I've seen the original Conehead sketch.
Oh yeah.
And I don't believe it's ever explained why they're from France or whatever. But it's always connected. I think it was just a joke. We come from France. And it was funny enough as it is. You know, you don't have to explain we come from France. It's just a cover story.
It's an axiom. Good luck.
Right. But if they are going to give us background on how all this came about, and I'm still talking about the movie here, that clip should have been in the movie since mm-hmm. I come from France is so closely connected to the Coneheads. Now, in the cartoon, they did get that right. Because the guy behind the counter in the television store says, you know, my parents came from France. Where are you guys from? And he's like, oh, we also come from France.
Yeah.
And then the guy behind the counter says, you know what? It doesn't matter where you're from. Just tell people you come from France and let it go.
Yeah.
So they did get that right. They did, you know, now we know why they say we come from France.
Boy, you know, you do good work, Mr.
Conehead. Beldar Conehead.
Oh, I'm Louis Bouchard. Hey, listen, I do need some help around here.
And we are seeking gainful employment.
Perhaps we could formulate some arrangement.
Look, I don't care where you're from. This is America. Heck, my grandfather came over from France. And that's all anyone has to know. By the way, where do you come from?
We too come from France.
Okay, well then, this is all gonna have to be done under the table.
Very well.
And it was in their origin, and they kept using it through the cartoon. So one thing they got right in this cartoon.
It was rough, man.
Yeah, there's not, this is going to be a short podcast because there's not really much to talk about. They move closer to Washington, D.C. because they were able to get in contact with their king. And we have, and once again, I don't know if this was a joke or if this was this part of the show. We had the nosy neighbors. So they move next into the nosy neighbors and they're like, oh, those next door neighbors are weird. They're not weird, Joe. We'll bring them a coffee cake. And
yeah.
So it's standard. Are they making fun of standard sitcoms?
The classic.
Or was it supposed to be a standard sitcom? I don't know. It's not made clear to me.
It's and such maybe a weird flavor.
It is such a weird flavor. And maybe if the series went on, they could have explored it more. But in this pilot, I don't know if they're making fun of something or they are trying to be that thing. I do not get it.
It's all just like, I don't know what it is. Cause like I said, is, you know, it was such an enjoyable like sketch and an enjoyable movie, but this just is like, there's nothing. I mean, and maybe it's just because like I knew all this information because like I said, it's essentially the movie just condensed down to like a quick form. And then they, at the end of the episode, they're talking to their leader and they say, we can't come get you due to budget cuts.
Yeah. Due to the cut to the military.
Yeah. So, but, and then going back to the neighbors, they bring over the coffee ring.
A coffee ring. Yeah. I've never heard of a coffee ring.
I think it was just a coffee bundt cake, I think is what it was.
So this might be why maybe they are making fun once again. So there's always like the confusion in a sitcom. There's always the misunderstanding that leads to the plot of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
They bring over this coffee donut or whatever it is. What was it called?
They called it a coffee ring.
A coffee ring. And Beldar mistakes it as a sex toy.
Yeah, the sensor rings that they have on their planet.
Right. Because, I don't know, for those of you who don't know, the Coneheads have these sensory, that's how I guess they have sex. They
put these sensory,
they put these sensory rings over their cones, and that's how they do it. And we'll talk about, and that comes up once more time before the episode is over. So Beldar, so there's misunderstanding. Oh, not in front of the child. It's like, so Beldar thinks that this coffee ring is a sex toy.
They're from a different planet.
Yeah.
And then they sit down, they have like a quick introduction. They're like, we're your neighbors. You know, we just wanted to come over. And then, you know, the daughter leaves to go to swim class and then they go, okay, well, we have to go fertilize the lawn, which sets up a joke that they do a couple of times of the incorrect definition. And they're like, okay, well, have a good day. And then they leave kind of, they're nothing except for that one joke of like the coffee ring. And then I guess the wrong definition was established. And that was the only purpose for that scene.
But something else I do remember is she is their daughter, Connie, is on the swim team in the movie. So that's another thing that they borrowed from the cartoon into the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I just remembered that. I just remembered that she was part of the part of the diving team because of her cone. They hit zero splash when she would hit the water.
And then Ronnie was her boyfriend's name in both the movie and this episode.
Oh, I did not know that. Nice catch there, Mr. Fordyce.
If I recall correctly.
Connie has a date in this, and the guy looks nothing like Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, they draw him like a 1960s hippie. This guy is supposed to be in high school with her.
That reminds
like
me.
He looks like a grown man.
Because they're expressing to their daughter is like right before she leaves, or is it right when she comes back that she was very like 60s hippie language where she's like, ah, this is such a drag and I just want to stay on this planet and groove and hang out.
That was before the date.
Okay. So it was just, I mean, maybe it was just the era or the time, but, and whatever setting they were going for, but they laid it on thick with some of her dialogue.
Right. And once again, that's typical sitcom fodder. The daughter, you know, the kids are talking a different language, daddy-o, than the parents.
this character was very hippies-ish. And like you said, like kind of a, didn't he look like older or something? But they were
He looked way older. He looks like one of those guys. What's that, Matthew McConaughey? Oh, man. The girls keep getting younger and I keep getting, or whatever. I keep getting older and the girls keep staying the same. Yeah, I was like, what was I going to say? I was just going to say something. Ah, shit. It's gone.
He looks kind of hippie-ish and 60-ish.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, so the daughter, Connie, when Lorraine Newman played her in the sketches on Saturday Night Live, she was very much like the parents, talked very much like the parents, even though she would use groovy music. Let me get my groove on, Mom. And the way she portrayed the actress, whose name I can't remember, portrayed her in the movie, she talked like the youth of her time because she was born in New Jersey or wherever it was. She was born in America. So she talked like a typical American girl. This version in the cartoon is sort of a combination of the two. Because she doesn't talk really as robotic as her parents, but she doesn't talk as freestyling as the actress who did it in the movie. So it's a sort of a weird combination of both Connies from the movie and from the TV show in this cartoon.
The question I have for you is, this gets more into the like deep dive of how do you feel humans grow? Is that more nature or nurture?
I think it's nature.
Okay.
I think that if Connie grew up around those kids, there comes a point where you spend more time mm-hmm. with your friends and outside influences than you do with your parents, and those definitely rub off on you. Well, it's just like, I would compare, it was just like if a couple from Korea came and they spoke English but with a very heavy accent, I believe their child would speak English probably without an accent if they were around the American culture. I feel this would be the same way, in alien form.
I think,
because I believe, and if I'm wrong, I believe in the sketches in Saturday Night Live, Connie came with them in the ship. Okay. So that's why she talked like that, because she was born on Remulac.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wrong, but that's the way I vaguely remember that. So
I'm going to have to watch some more of those sketches.
You can probably find them on SNL Vintage on YouTube. They have all the old Saturday Night Live, and I'm sure they have all the Coneheads.
So the daughter, she goes on this date with this, I guess her boyfriend. and then they kind of like go to Make Out Cove, and she's like revealing to him, like, oh, you know, I might have to move back to France. And he's like, just don't move back to France. How about that? Now come over here and give me some of those French kisses. And then it like zooms out.
And then it pans up. Yeah, it pans up off of them. It's just like, okay.
And then she comes home late and she's like, sorry, I'm late. I was busy. And she comes back into the house. And then they kind of discuss a little bit more that they're going to be stuck there because the sitcom's going to happen over and over again, I'm sure. And then there's a knock at the door and Ronnie's there.
Right. And Ronnie has one of their sex rings.
You forgot this in my car, honey. And then the dad freaks out.
Greetings.
Sorry, Mr. Conehead, but Connie, you left this in the car.
Oh, boy.
Connie, you removed a sensor ring from your parental unit's sleep chamber? Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
And with a human of all creatures. Mibs. Mibs.
See you at school tomorrow, Connie.
And kind of like does he slam the door? And he's like,
No, he doesn't slam the door. Ronnie's like, okay, babe, I'll see you at school tomorrow because I'm the janitor.
That's what it is. That's why they go to school together.
Yeah, exactly.
Worst kid show ever.
Yeah. And then it's the standard. So you see all three of them arguing through the window, and then they pan out, and then the credits and the end music
starts. That's what we cut credits on, is you were fucking, get out of right. here. Like, and that's the climax.
So pun intended. Hoo-ah!
Ooh. But that's what they ended the show on. There wasn't, I mean, I understand there wasn't a resolution and they didn't want to, because they were going to try to have an episodic and they were stuck on the planet. But they ended the show on, my daughter came home from like fuck point and was using janitor. Our sex toys with the janitor. And, you know, one of these days, boom,
because usually the moon. A sitcom, even in the pilot episode, it's standard. You know, there's a problem and we solve it in 22 minutes. Here, none of the problems get solved. It like they can't get back to Remulac. They're not going to be able to take over the Earth.
Their daughter's promiscuous.
Their daughter is, you know, having sex in a car with a janitor. It's like all these unanswered questions that will never be in. And I get no. I guess if you think of the movie as the second episode to this, maybe you get your questions answered.
But they go back to the planet. I guess they have a little bit more time to explore. And then they come back and then they fake a threat and then blow up their ship. So they're back on Earth and they're happy that they're on Earth. This leaves the episode with they're stuck. They're miserable. Map, map, map.
Right. Because they say several times they don't like it there on Earth.
Yeah. And they didn't learn to like through their course. You know what it was? They were happier before the daughter came along, in because they seemed really happy to be in the TV station or the TV fix, or maybe it's before they moved. So the suburban life has taken them down.
Yes. And that's it. That's the pilot episode of the Coneheads from 1983. And it's awful. It's just terrible. There's no other way around it. I love all the people involved in it. It's unwatchable.
My final note on my page is I hated it. Go watch the movie.
Or go back and watch the sketches. This cartoon has no redeeming quality. And once again, I'm going to compare it to the Star Wars Christmas special. You may just want to watch it once just to say that I've watched it. But
it's on the internets for free, so why not?
Yes, it's on YouTube for free. Coneheads unaired pilot, look it up. That's where we watched it. I was looking; they're like selling. I was on eBay. They're selling like VHS tapes for like $40. It's like God, no! It's not worth it.
No,
it's not even as a collector's item. This is not worth collecting. it's barely worth watching for free. I feel YouTube should slip me a couple of bucks for watching that. That's how bad this is.
It was rough. It was very like you said, like right out of the gate with the first like laugh track moment. I knew what I was in for as soon as that hit, and I was like, oh no, Scott, what did you make me do?
I don't know. I made you watch Coneheads, the unaired pilot.
It's okay. I believe in one of my podcasts, I said, I'll watch terrible things. So you're sticking true to my word.
I'm sticking true. And I
appreciate it.
This might be one of the worst things that I've reviewed on this podcast.
That's saying a lot.
It's right up there with, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. It's on that. Nothing will be as bad as I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
That's the low bar?
That's the low bar because I just feel it was just done for money and all that. Even with this, I feel that there was a lot because everybody, I mean, all three voice actors were involved. Lorne Michaels, Tom Davis, Al Franken, all those people from Saturday Night Live, they were all involved in this. I believe they wanted to make a good product. I just don't know how they got so far off the track and made this.
Yeah, like I've said before, is like sometimes you get so invested, and then also I've put projects together where like you're looking at the big picture and you kind of can't see the small details, and then you get to editing and then you're looking at like scene by scene and you're nostalgic for the moments you had, and then at the end of it you take a step back and you're like, this is a pile of shit, but it's done. All right, put it up.
Put it up. We did it. I can't believe this was like you know, network meddling.
Well, here's
I think this was what they had, and they just got it wrong.
Well, here's the thing too, is like they, and it was years later, but they set it up and did it so well with Third Rock from the Sun that, you know, the fish out of water, the aliens come to the planet, they're trying to study humans. And I love Third Rock from the Sun. So, you know, if these are the seeds that grew, you know, the bitter seeds that turned into the sweet fruit that was the movie Coneheads and Third Rock from the Sun, you know, I'm glad I watched it.
They learn from their mistakes.
Exactly.
The movie. They didn't repeat the mistakes in the movie that they did in the cartoon.
Do you think they were just too, like, dry or too, like, I mean, too fish out of water? Or, I mean, could you put your finger on what was off about it?
They just didn't seem like the characters from Saturday Night Live. And none of the jokes were funny. I mean, that was it. All of the jokes were incredibly unfunny.
But they had and maybe I need to go back and watch the Coneheads and its nostalgia, like I said, but they even had some similar jokes in the movies and in the sketches, and those worked for me. But maybe just because it was a quicker format, or just like maybe like I was referencing, is seeing stiff people act like aliens might be better than watching poor drawings of it.
Well, the laugh track didn't help either, because there's no laugh track in the movie, and in Saturday Night Live, you have the live audience. The laugh track really threw everything off.
It cringed me.
Cringe-worthy laugh track.
And they also had applause sometimes.
Applause track as well, yeah.
All right,
so we're done talking about it.
Thank God.
So, Will, where can we find you on the interweb net?
I have a... Gnome on the Go on Instagram, which with periods in between each word, or on TikTok at Bad Bald Boss. That would work too. Or my email address, www.will.com@gmail.com. I usually don't check that, but sometimes I do.
All right. That's it. This has been another episode of the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I can't believe we got close to 40 minutes talking about this cartoon, but we did. But we did. I want to thank Will for suffering. We got it all done in one day. I still have to edit this, but we got the whole torture done in one day. Tearing the Band-Aid off. You didn't have to watch it and then wait and then I have to rewatch it again. We did it all in one take.
Well, I'm a bit of a masochist, so this worked out great.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Will, for doing this, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Dan Aykroyd
Podcast. And cut.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
You have stimulated me. Allow me to administer the senso rings to you. No more after this one, Beldar. This is it.
Yes, yes, I am in agreement.
Beldar!
Ah, I see the little cone. Push, Primat, push. It is a female.
Daddy's little cone.
And she shall be named Connie.
Cross the Streams Media.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.
Sorry?
This must never be seen by anyone.
If you didn't like all those close-ups, we can. No, this is not the final cut. There's no doubt we can.
Copies. Destroy them.
You want me to play it again?
Has anybody seen this?
Nobody has seen this.
They have to be found and talked to.
All right. To be honest, I showed my wife.
No
she
good.
Couldn't believe.
No good.